Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We've talked about this many times over the last 8 years, the almost constant assault, legal, political, sometimes by merely passively refusing to defend things like the Defense of Religious Freedom or the Defense of Marriage Act. Those kinds of things on the part of the Obama administration has been a feature of the last 8 years. It is certainly part of his legacy. In fact, one of those things, Obergefell, the same-sex marriage Supreme Court decision, President Obama himself says that's part of his legacy. We're going to talk about that legacy. Andrew Walker joins us, Director of Policy Studies with the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, co-author of a recent column for National Review Online titled From Obamacare to Obergefell, the Obama Administration's Troubled Legacy on Religious Liberty. Andrew, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
President Obama began 8 years ago talking very openly about his personal Christian faith. Has that personal religious bent translated into, for him after 8 years, a concern for the religious liberty of Americans?
So the position that I kind of take on how the Obama administration handled religious liberty over the last 8 years is that they did what was expected as far as some of the obligatory concerns regarding the place of religion in American life. So, for example, participating in prayer breakfasts and issuing presidential days of prayer. But as far as it's concerned with how they handled religious liberty for those with whom disagreed with the administration, it was not necessarily a positive outcome over the last 8 years. Like I argue in the essay I wrote at National Review, they worked very systematically to take a robust conception of religious liberty that has been at the heart of kind of the American experience for over 200 years, and they worked to make religion a much more privatized thing that exists solely in solely within the house of worship or a church or a synagogue or a mosque. Now, it should be noted the Obama administration was not hostile to religion. President Obama was very vocal about his faith. The difficulty, though, is that when it came time to choose between progressive values, whether that's gay rights, same-sex marriage, and access to contraception, which conflicted with some individuals' moral beliefs, they chose the progressive route over and against the religious liberty concerns of others. And so I think that speaks for itself in terms of where the real emphasis and accent was over the last 8 years.
I want to talk about Obergefell a little bit later, but you say that story actually began about 4 years before that Supreme Court decision with the failure of an Obama administration attorney general, Eric Holder, to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. Tell us about that.
So, yeah, in 2011, the Obama administration, working in tandem with the Department of Justice, decided that they would no longer uphold aspects of the Defense of Marriage Act. And the Defense of Marriage Act was a very, very important piece of legislation signed into law by Bill Clinton in 1996 that said that the federal government would retain the definition of marriage as existing between a man and a woman, and that states would not be required to recognize a same-sex marriage performed in a different state. And so, you know, there's always been great speculation about what President Obama believed about same-sex marriage before his so-called evolution in 2012. But the steps taken in 2011 made it very clear that the Obama administration was done defending this definition of marriage. It was against the wishes of their progressive constituency, and it just didn't, for them, add up to something that seemed to be an electorally wise strategy. And to me, it confirmed in a lot of people's minds that Barack Obama, when he was a candidate, never really strongly retained or strongly believed in a male-female definition of marriage. And so to me, in 2011, this was kind of the true mask coming off, and President Obama really kind of saying where his administration was going to land on same-sex marriage. And as we would see in the Obergefell ruling, where a government lands on marriage has direct consequence for how it's going to treat those who disagree with the government's definition of marriage. And so that was kind of the first tipping point where we saw this kind of posture of hostility develop between the administration and citizens who have different beliefs about marriage.
If you would review the actions that have usually been called Obamacare, beginning with the HHS mandate.
Sure. So within Obamacare, there is an aspect of the law called the Health and Human Services mandate. And this was a small portion of the law designed to determine what in the kind of penumbra of free services would be included within the legislation. And the Institute of Medicine decided that within the HHS mandate, contraception would be freely provided within the provisions of the healthcare law. And this had a lot of conflict and controversy, especially with the Catholic Church, which has a view that is they speak against the role of contraception. And then not only that, it has a great concern with evangelicals and other Protestants who have some concern about the types of contraceptions that were being advocated for freely within the HHS mandate, that some of these contraceptive devices could potentially be abortion-causing. And so the perspective of many evangelicals and many Catholics is that it's not the job of individuals or businesses or nonprofits to be forced to provide these services that are against their conscience. And as we all know, these cases became very, very prominent in the culture. They became aspects of the culture war. We saw this play out with the Hobby Lobby case, where thankfully the government lost that case, and the justices sided with the free exercise of religion. And then we saw this especially play out with the Little Sisters of the Poor case, where again, it was determined that the government had not done their due diligence in seeing if there was a least restrictive way to see their policy objectives fulfilled without hurting the religious liberty values of this group of nuns who care for people at the end of their life. And so this was a major flashpoint. And it, again, it demonstrates kind of the active aggression that the Obama administration took against communities of faith.
Let's talk about Obergefell, the decision that made same-sex marriage legal across all 50 states. President Obama actually does see this as a major feature of his legacy, yet in a different way than you do.
Correct. No, that's absolutely correct. I think that Obergefell was the defining tipping point that was going to forever kind of enshrine in American civil life this epic conflict over same-sex marriage and gay rights, and what do you do with millions and millions and millions of citizens who have a religious belief about marriage that's at odds with the government. And what is the government going to do to those institutions and those persons who don't agree with the government's definition? And we saw this play out in the oral arguments of the Obergefell case. It's a well-documented moment in history when the Solicitor General of the United States was asked by a Supreme Court justice whether or not the government's argument in Obergefell would eventually conflict with religious liberty to such a degree that it could potentially pose problems for institutions' tax statuses. And the Solicitor General, it's quite stunning, he says, that's a good point, Justice. I just don't know. I just don't know what's going to happen. And so this sense of ignorance about what would happen in the future really betrays what a lot of legal scholars and religious liberty advocates knew would happen, is that once you go down this path of making same-sex marriage a constitutional right, it puts any institution that disagrees with that interpretation of what a constitutional right is, it puts them at odds. And so if you're at odds with the government on these civil rights protections, and these constitutional protections, that's going to come at a great cost to you in the terms of your tax exempt status, whether or not you're found to be violating American non-discrimination law. It affects whether or not people can donate to your organization and receive a tax exemption. It affects your tax liability if you bring in revenue. So there's just a lot of repercussions that we're still kind of working out as a result of Obergefell. And sadly, President Obama is leaving office and there's really no good resolution in sight.
Describe the Obama administration's actions regarding sexual orientation and gender identity.
The Obama administration took every opportunity it could to see sexual orientation and gender identity elevated into the law. They did that using executive orders. They did that supporting legislation like the Equality Act and the Employment Non-Discrimination Act that both sought to elevate sexual orientation and gender identity to the level of a protected class in line with other protected classes. And what this would have the intended effect of doing is, again, like Obergefell, if you are a religious employer and you do not want to hire someone in a same-sex marriage based on your religious beliefs, that could be an opportunity for you to face a lawsuit or litigation because you're at odds with the government's definition of a protected class. And so the Obama administration was aggressively behind these legislative efforts. Thankfully, these legislative efforts never passed into law. And so we have been safeguarded from these. But the mere fact that the Obama administration was willing to take these actions and did, especially using executive orders, it showed, again, a kind of a carelessness towards religious liberty.
What is the Obama administration's track record when it comes to international religious freedom?
The Obama administration did some good work on the international front. Two things come to mind. First, they filled an important role for international ambassador for religious liberty in David Saperstein. And David Saperstein, I don't agree with him politically, but by all accounts, he's been a good ambassador for international religious liberty. And what that means is he's a part of the State Department whose job is to promote religious liberty as a part of the diplomatic efforts of the United States, because the United States views religious freedom as an important part of our global influence because it helps stabilize other countries. And so they had a good appointment there. Unfortunately, the office was actually vacant during President Obama's administration more than it was filled. But when it was filled by someone who was a good advocate. And then secondly, they did sign into law the Frank Wolf Religious Freedom International Act that helped kind of intensify and expand some of the State Department aspects of religious liberty. So on those two issues, the Obama administration did a good job. And so we want to be able to applaud the Obama administration where they did good work and criticize them where they did less than good work.
Finally, you talk about the Hosanna-Tabor Supreme Court decision as an event that put to rest any doubts about the Obama administration's effort to weaken religious liberty in American life. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So the Hosanna-Tabor case, without going into all the details, was very, very important because at the heart of the case was whether or not a religious institution had the ability to govern itself. And the Obama administration took the position that no, in this instance, a religious school did not have the ability to hire and fire based on its own religious convictions, which was a very, very troubling precedent. And thankfully, the Supreme Court unanimously sided against Obama administration's Justice Department, and even the court's liberals sided with religious liberty because they understood that while there are debates about how religious liberty is exercised in the public square, it's a whole separate issue of kind of interfering with the religious liberty of religious institutions themselves. And so the Supreme Court took the position that's not the job of the government to police or act as kind of a referee or umpire on what happens inside of a religious body.
Finally, with only 30 seconds, would you characterize this track record as activist against religious liberty in any sense?
My big argument that about the Obama administration on religious liberty is that they were extremely hostile to the robust conception of religious liberty being one of free exercise, and they were more than willing to politicize religious liberty in order to score political wins. So these popular phrases like license to discriminate and war on women that were used by the left at every opportunity, these types of phrases were used by activists associated with the Obama administration. And so the Obama administration was willing to play partisan politics with religious liberty because they viewed the religious liberty of those they disagreed with on basic matters of sexuality and gender at odds with their view of justice. And that's not a proper conception of religious liberty. It ought to be the position of the government that, yes, we can have a heated debate about matters of the definition of marriage and family and sex and gender identity issues, but it's not the job of the government to tell and make proclamations against bodies that simply have a different position than the government on the matter.
Could President Obama's use of the term freedom of worship rather than free exercise or religious liberty explain how the Obama administration understood these issues in the last 8 years?
Yes, it could. So there were several places throughout the 8 years where this phrase freedom of worship was used by Obama administration officials, which signaled that in their view, religious liberty was about exercising the ability to just go to church or to worship freely inside the four walls of a building, which is partly right. It's not the broadest, fullest conception of religious liberty, because religious liberty at its heart is about the ability to exercise one's convictions, to live one's convictions out in every aspect of our lives, because we believe that religion is at the core of our being, and it animates so much of our actions in the public square, and it animates what we determine is true, good, and beautiful. And so there was this just shrinking effect of religious liberty in the Obama administration.
Andrew Walker is director of policy studies with the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. He's co-author of a recent column for National Review Online titled "From Obamacare to Obergefell: The Obama Administration's Troubled Legacy on Religious Liberty." You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Andrew, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you very much.
Pastor Hans Feeney joins us on the other side of the break. We'll talk about Garrison Keillor's announcement that he's looking for a new religion, not Christianity. A little bit of a satire on his part. We'll see what's behind it. Stay tuned.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What are some of the myths of gospel reductionism? I've written part two of an article titled "Better Than Good: Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel" in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Joy Pullman of The Federalist writes about her journey from charismatic experientialism to confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
I'm Pastor Watson. Are you tired of entertainment and in need of the peace that passes human understanding? I invite you to Augsburg Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Kansas, to receive the gifts of Jesus. Augsburg is scriptural, traditional, historical, sacramental, and reverent. The Church of the Apostles, the Councils, and the Reformers wants to be your church family also. For more information, visit us at augsburglutheranchurch.org.